Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. For more information, visit MOFAD.org.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and it's a beautiful fall Sunday here in Brooklyn. I think this is like the first weekend that's really felt like fall so far, and you can feel that crispness in the air. It's getting cooler, so it's getting a little bit more appropriate to think about turning on the kitchen oven or just cooking a bit more, maybe some long projects, maybe some baking. I have a guest. It's her. I'm so pleased to welcome her back to her third episode here on Heritage because her book, first of all, she's the author of four books about French cuisine. So she's my favorite culinary French food expert. But her first book was Cuisine Niçoise. Then there's French Comfort Food, Le French Oven, and now Les Desserts. So French Desserts is the latest book that I'm holding by Hilary Davis.
Hi, Kathy. Happy to be here again.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is a very delightful, very tempting topic, but I wanted to start off the program, if we may, with a little current issues in food.
Okay.
Okay. So with the election just a few weeks ahead of us now, I think it's time we took a moment to consider
what is coming.
What would a Donald Trump presidency mean for food in this country?
Food.
Okay. Okay. I know perhaps it's not the most pressing, you know, issue because what the country would mean for, I mean, we'd probably be part of Russia, right? Let's face it. But anyway, we don't really have that much to go on with his food policy until recently we received a clue.
What is it?
So he was addressing some supporters at a Republican club in New York City a couple weeks ago, and he vowed to roll back on the powers of the Food and Drug Administration, calling the FDA the food police.
Wow.
And saying that their food safety measures, their oversight of even dog food production and other food production, like, checking for safe temperatures of food and, you know, like they do for restaurants and so forth, and other food producers. He said that was inspection overkill, and he vowed to roll back. So maybe I'm missing something here, but I don't exactly see anyone clamoring for more E. coli outbreaks or more lax rules around their dog's food.
It's funny. Dog food is really not regulated very well.
Right,
if you look at what's put in it.
And we're already having all these food recalls all the time.
Right. I don't think you can help that. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, the restaurants, all over the world, and everybody seems to be fine.
Okay.
And because of the internet and the radio, we hear about it here or we talk about it more. I'm all for health safety. Here comes my politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Health safety for people who can't help themselves. So babies, animals,
yes,
children.
People the most vulnerable.
Yeah. Baby food, anything that goes towards people who can't think or take care of themselves, the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the rest of us, I think we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
We're smart enough to, I'd rather see less regulation. I think some of the regulation we have in New York City, rating restaurants on how clean they are, that's lovely.
Yeah.
But I think it should be part of our culture and our mental demeanor rather than being told to do it. So that's,
right.
I waffle on this a little bit,
yeah.
But I think you know, babies and elderly and animals should be protected.
Sure.
With more regulation.
Yeah. And baby
food, too. I mean, it's baby food is dicey. So,
yes.
And dog food's dicey. I usually make
that's
my
an emotionally charged
dogs their
issue,
own
too.
Food.
So that's why I'm surprised. I'm not sure how much public or popular support there would be for that. But maybe there's, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Just any cuts are good cuts. I just don't know. Any federal agency is a bad federal agency that doesn't need to exist. I don't know. So that's that. But anyway.
Now, onto the Clintons. I don't know. I think they enjoy their food.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
I can see that.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get food policy out of that. I think you're going to get... You know, yeah. A different emphasis.
I think so. Do you think that Hillary likes French desserts?
I don't know, but I could ask her.
Okay.
I'll send her a book.
Hillary, what should I make you?
You know, I actually met her.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's amazing because I was working in healthcare for a while. So I went to a speech that she gave about healthcare. And I thought, well, I'm Hillary. She's Hillary. Mm-hmm. So I ran up to the stage and I said, hi, I'm Hillary. And she said, oh, we Hillarys have to hang together.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's get a picture taken.
That is so
cool.
So
she took my phone away and handed it to someone in front. And they took our picture. And I still have that picture.
No way.
But I thought it showed a really soft side, a lovely, humane, you know, this cool side to her that doesn't come out too often because she looks very presidential.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm really charmed by that story.
Yeah, she was lovely. And there were all these people around her clamoring to talk to her who were journalists and people who mattered. And I was just this, you know, person who had been sitting in the audience who's so sweet.
Hillary.
Yeah,
oh, that is nice. So really sweet. Oh, cool. I could definitely see her digging into a French dessert now that I think about it. You know, just enjoying the kind of the fun things in life, which is what
desserts
are all
great.
About. What do you think? Which dessert is for her in this book? I don't know. That's a
I think
question.
The cookie on the cover.
Yeah?
Yeah,
I
it's
love
a break
this.
And share cookie. She can serve it at all public dinners at the White House.
It is. That's a great idea.
It's a communal cookie.
I've never seen this cookie except for, like, you know, I've seen giant chocolate chip cookies, I guess, but this is like a traditional French.
When I heard about this, I had to find the recipe because I love the philosophy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's only made in Poitou, Charente-Poitou, a certain area of France.
Okay.
And it's only found there.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be shared. So after weddings, baptisms, electing the mayor, anytime the little villages come together in the town hall or in the parish, they make one of these gigantic cookies. Mm-hmm. They're about 15 inches across, about half an inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone breaks off this communal cookie and shares.
That's such and a lovely kind of sentiment. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the sentiment. And I do it now after all my dinner parties. I bring out this cookie. We don't break bread. We break cookie.
We break cookie together.
Yeah, we do. But it's a nice...
That's really lovely.
It's a nice thing. And it tastes like shortbread.
Yes, it looks like shortbread, which is great to
me. Yeah, it's like... There are like 5 ingredients.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just so easy to put together. And it's very pretty.
It is. It's very elegant, actually.
Yeah, it's elegant.
In its simplicity and just kind of pureness. You don't need too many things in a cookie.
No.
If you do it right.
Yeah.
It is. Good, I mean, butter.
Yeah, good butter. I mean, look at Tuil.
Okay.
One of my favorite cookies.
The Tuil means those little crispy...
They're paper thin, and then they're, like, curled.
Yes.
And in France, you see
like
them
straws.
With ice cream. Yeah, you can
straw
make cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can twirl them into that, too.
Mm.
But I have a recipe in here I love. It's only, like, you know, again, a handful of ingredients.
Okay.
But I decided to make it with pumpkin seeds.
Mm.
And so they come out a little green, but then it tastes
that
really good.
That sounds really great.
Yeah, it's sort of edgy.
A little
tart
crunch,
twist on it. Yeah.
A little texture in there and definitely like that appealing little look to it. I love that you're taking on classics that are meant to be cooked at home and they have been, and it's very possible to. I mean, a lot of people are intimidated when it comes to cooking desserts.
Right.
Because of all the technique of maybe making twills, right?
Yeah, that's so easy.
Really?
Really. Just whip egg whites. and you throw in a little flour and cornstarch and sugar, and you've got your twill batter. Mm-hmm. And then you just drop it on a cookie sheet and take your finger and smooth it out into as paper thin as you can. Bake it for six minutes, and that's it. I mean, how easy is that?
And then it's pliable?
It's pliable. Yeah. They say, you know, wrap it over a rolling pin.
Right.
I just hold them for a couple seconds, each one in my hand. Mm-hmm. And that's as long as it takes for them to hold.
Oh, okay.
To get their shape.
But to make a, like a cone, you would take like a cone-shaped thingamajig to
you
wrap
could,
it around?
You could, or you can just do it with your
cigarette.
Hands.
Or you could take a cigarette and wrap it around.
Surprise! Kathy, I don't know.
Okay.
A cigarette inside of a cigarette cookie. No, they're really...
It sounds very French.
The French desserts, like you think of really frou-frou and like the pâtisseries and all this fancy stuff. That's great. But the French go to the pastry shop for that. They don't make them. Like, but at home, they make stuff with their kids.
Right.
And or they'll make it for their kids or for friends. So it's easy, like easy and very economical cooking. And what I did was, when I started this, I thought the one thing I really want to do is bring real France to the American reader, because we always see the same recipes over and over again in French kind of recipes, like, you know, souffle and you know, creme caramel and eclairs. So I went, when I travel, I look for regional desserts. The little villages often promote their own special dessert for tourism, because then people will come. So a lot of the recipes in this cookbook are things you'll never see in another cookbook. I mean, that cookie, the Broyé de Poitou, I haven't seen in another
cookbook. The Broyé de Poitou is from where in France? I need
Poitou-Charentes. Charentes-Poitou. It's sort of northwest.
Northwest.
And then Niflets are adorable. They're from Provence, which, again, you can only get them there. And they're these adorable little puff pastry things that you so easy to make. And they're filled with this luscious pillow of vanilla pudding, you know, pastry
creme
cream.
Anglaise?
No, pastry cream. It's thicker.
Okay.
And that had a great story. They say that it originated when the village people were sad listening to the orphans cry in the orphanage.
Oh my gosh.
What, because they lost their parents, or, you know, their parents died.
Of course.
They were put in an orphanage, and so the village people said, we're going to think of something, some dessert that we can take to them to cheer them up. And that's the story behind Niflets. It means don't cry.
Oh.
And so these, like you can see, they made these little cookies with this luscious, soft vanilla pudding in them.
Oh my gosh.
And when I make it for people, I just get huge smiles. So you can sort of believe that story. I mean,
that's
want to.
That's a wonderful story. I think I would cry of joy if somebody gave that to me. Deliciousness.
Yeah, but I tried to find, you know, really... The one I love that is so wild. Mm-hmm. Listen to this one.
Okay.
This is from Brittany. It's called Fouez Buen or Fars Buen. It's hard to say. Anyway, so you make crepe batter, which like how easy is that? You just throw it in a blender.
Crepe
batter, And then you pour your crepe into the pan like you would make a crepe. Then you take a fork and a knife and you start cutting it like you would cutting a sandwich or something, and you cut it all up until it starts looking like scrambled eggs a little bit.
Okay,
and then you put in sugar and butter, and you keep tossing it as it cooks, and that caramelizes into these amazing little pillows of crepe batter that are on the outside have this, you know, caramelized buttery flavor.
That's great,
unbelievable mess on your plate, but it is so good. Good.
That sounds like a lot of fun to make, too.
Yeah, the kids love it. And then I've seen mothers, they're either drizzle, you know, warm jam over it before they give it to their kids.
That's what
or
they do with cleps and
I would put ice cream, I think, and just let it melt all over this stuff. It's so good. But, I mean...
Do you think that somebody invented that because they were like, oops. And then screwed it up, and then yeah.
Yes, that's brilliant. It's probably like the tartatin, which was a mistake.
Yeah, possible. Oh, the tartatin was a
That was
apple.
A mistake.
So that means an apple pie without a crust, right?
Yeah, it's upside down.
Okay.
So it's an upside down apple pie.
What was the mistake? That sounds great.
It was in a restaurant, and they made a mistake, and they ended up serving it, and
without
voila.
A crust. Oh, no.
Voila. So, you know, mistakes are good.
Cool.
Mistakes are good.
I want to talk. So there's this regional dish here that is from Edrenes. The region of Ardennes.
Yes.
In northern France. There's a lot of northern French here.
Yeah, there are, because
really
they're unusual.
Yeah,
and a lot of unusual things there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this is sweet sugar bread Ardennes.
Oh,
it looks
so
very simple, too. It looks like something you plop in. I can't even describe it. It just looks like a simple cake.
It's a bread.
Rustic.
It's a bread. It's made with yeast.
Yeast.
And you make it in a pie plate.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this bread. It is
yeasted bread. Yum.
And when you, it's a very forgiving. It's like a donut, but it's a very forgiving dough. Mm-hmm. So you really can mess it up, and it'll be lovely. Don't even think about, you know, having a problem with it. And then the really cool thing they do is just before they put it in the oven, they take their hands and very gently make a well in the center of this puffy bread dough.
Mm-hmm.
And they whip one egg with some sugar.
Oh, is that what that is?
And they wipe it over this well. And when it bakes, oh, you get this crispy, like, crust on the top. Eggy, sugary.
Crystally eggy, sugar.
Amazing, this bread.
That's really cool.
Really good.
I love that. I love learning about that.
I haven't even seen that in bakeries there.
Yeah.
It's
never seen any of these things, and they're so rustic and kind of homey. So
yeah.
Definitely like your sort of style of writing, which I love. Okay, let's cut to a quick little commercial interlude, and we'll be right back chatting more.
And this one is called Carried Away by The Hollows. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Peter Kim, the executive director of MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. We're a nonprofit founded by Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues here on the Heritage Radio Network. And we want to take people on a learning adventure through the world of food. We just opened MOFAD Lab, our gallery space at 62 Bayard Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where we are currently showing Flavor, Making It and Faking It. Flavor features some very cool sensory interaction. Flavor tablets deliver tastings of vanilla and umami, and the Willy Wonka-inspired smell synth lets you compose over 500,000 different flavors. So come on by and visit MOFAD Lab. We're open 5 days a week, and tickets are $5 for kids and $10 for adults. Learn more about the Museum of Food and Drink at mofad.org.
All right, we're chatting with Hilary Davis, our sweet guest today. She has written French Desserts, this new authoritative cookbook, and it's actually a really eye-opening cookbook. There's so many regional recipes here that are little known, so thank you for doing the terrible, arduous task of going around France and eating to research.
Avec plaisir. No problem.
C'est triste.
Well, you know, it's funny because you would think it would be fattening, right?
Yeah.
And you would think desserts, you know, because we tend to, you know, put a lot of like buttercream on our cakes, and we love
that's
a lot of yummy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their desserts are just seem to me a little leaner.
Okay.
You know, they don't have a lot of, I mean, there's no frostings usually.
Yeah.
If you go to a
pastry
shop, you know, you'll get a very thin ganache, a mirror, a beautiful mirror of chocolate ganache or something, but it's thin.
And the pastry cream is more pudding-like or custard-like, right?
And it's good for you. It's eggs,
it's
milk.
It's not lard.
Yeah. Right.
And that sounds more appealing to me, too. Let's talk about this crazy lady fingers with poached pears sticking out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And
The pear Charlotte.
Okay.
So Charlotte,
Un adorable Charlotte d'Alpois. Okay.
Yeah, so they're traditionally like super fancy. You will get it in the best pastry shops in France, not in all pastry shops. They're really, really fancy desserts. However, when I started experimenting making them, I realized, oh my God, this tastes so good. I mean, they came out amazing. And then second, they are dead easy to make. It's just that you have to, they take a lot of time.
Yeah.
So I set aside 2 days, like a weekend or something.
Yeah, do it in pieces, you know.
And you do
make
it
the
in
cookies,
steps.
The ladyfinger cookies, one step. And
I
then
buy those.
Okay.
Yeah. I buy those, so that's even faster.
Even better.
Yeah.
Well, I was just remarking because, you know, this isn't like all this, you know, like fat or like buttercream. It's like, you know, fruit.
Yeah.
A little bit of drizzle of chocolate on top, and it's kind of wholesome looking, even though I'm sure it's really, really satisfyingly delicious and decadent.
It's light as air when it comes in your mouth.
That's
that
right.
Pear flavor is amazing.
There is a lot of air used, too. It's not like dense,
right.
Like some desserts.
Right, right. They're very light and fluffy, and, you know, the cookies are plain.
Mm-hmm.
The cookies are not pretty cookies. They're not, again, the ones that you get in pâtisseries. You get what you get at home is, you know, this little blob, like, you know, there's these little, like, there's a cookie made in Marseille, and it's a little boat cookie. It's called navette. It's a navette is a little rowboat.
Okay.
And it's just this little, these little tiny plain shaped cookies. They're made with olive oil, nut butter. They're to die for. They're so good.
Ooh, Marseille, yes, the olive oil would be used instead. I love that. Do you think there's less sugar too, or it's less sweet than
our
desserts here?
I would say yes. Even the soufflés I've had, they're not overly sugary. So if you do buy my book, you want to put in maybe a little more sugar, or just taste it as you go. Always taste before you bake or put something in.
I'm sure I'll be happy with the way you've done it on your book. But
and there's some fruit desserts in there, because the French, believe it or not, actually prefer fruit for dessert, especially in the south of France.
Yeah.
People love fresh fruit. We rarely have fresh fruit for dessert, right?
Right.
But there they love, you know, fresh fruit. And they'll, you know, fruits. I have a fruit salad in there. Recipe in there. I just play with it. I mean, I soak it in a tea I make with Herbe de Provence. an infusion with Herbe de Provence and sugar, which I never thought of doing, but when I did it, it tasted so good. And then I put it in the, toss all this fruit in there and let it marinate in the sweet Herbe de Provence broth. And that one's really good. But the French do love fruit. So I did put in 2 or 3 or 4 fruit recipes.
That sounds lovely. And, you know, in the south of France, they have so much wonderful fresh fruit. It's a totally different climate. So do you think that really impacts, like, the regional differences of recipes?
Exactly. So you Normandy.
For desserts.
And Brittany, it's freezing. And they have, that's
right. Shortbread.
Shortbread. I mean, you drive and, you know, you see these rolling green fields with these beautiful big bovine
cows,
and that's where the desserts are butter-centric.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, butter and cream. In the south of France, we use olive oil and fruit. And then and you go up into the Alps, and you'll see more cheese in desserts.
Oh.
So, or cheese for dessert.
Oh, so like maybe a cheesecake, which I saw you have a very interesting cheesecake recipe with vegetables in it.
I made it up. I totally made it up. Yeah,
that one's
I've
really
never
exciting.
Seen it anywhere.
Well, I think that one's really creative. I love the little bit of savory and sweet in a
cheesecake.
It's
delicious. It's I made it up when I lived in the south of France, because the Niçoise use Swiss chard in everything, and they make a Swiss chard pie. A sweet pie.
No kidding.
And then I had a lot of goat's cheese from my neighbors. So I thought, I'm going to put all this together. I am so going to mix this. So it's a goat cheese cheesecake. And you have the beautiful rainbow Swiss chard sprinkled through it. And it has currants. They use currants and pine nuts there. All these wonderful flavors together.
Wow,
so,
that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's really good.
And, you know, that's really funny. I once had a guest on the show tell a story about the worst baking experiment, where she thought she was making a rhubarb pie, and didn't know what she was buying at the store and actually bought Swiss chard. And
then, oh my God, that's funny.
That yeah, you can make a Swiss chard pie that's sweet. It didn't work out too well for her, though. So did you make up this wonderful-sounding recipe? I love the name. It's a cloud of lemon vermouth mousse.
I did actually make that one up. How this, do you...
It sounds cool.
You're getting to know me.
I am pretty well here.
Yeah, no, that's really good.
Une mousse de luc, I can't say it. But I love the combination of the lemon and a little touch of booze.
Yeah, because it dries it out. It has a very dry, it's an elegant mousse.
Mm.
It's very light and elegant.
Now, one of the more interesting things I've seen, especially due to its striking photo, it kind of looks like a pile of fresh laundry, like white sheets that are just like plopped into this pie pan. What is this? It's the Pastis Gascon.
I love it. So I was looking at the British baking show, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
And they give you really hard desserts sometimes to make. And they one of their challenges was to make a Pastis Gascon. Ooh. And as I watched it, I went, this is really hard. There must be an easier way. So then I played with it, and I came up with this. And this is a really easy way to make it. And it's beautiful because
it is beautiful.
Instead of making that paper thin pastry, I just use phyllo.
Okay.
And when you bunch it together gently, it looks like ruffles. And
that sounds fun again.
It's just fun.
Play around with it and then bunch it in this irregular way rather than, you know, people think that, you know, when you think of, oh gosh, cakes and cake making and all the pretty precise craziness, like wedding cakes. Like, this is just the haphazardness.
It's freeform.
Yeah, freeform.
Random. You just how you feel that day. You sort of throw these little wisps of white phyllo and make them into, you can even make a big pile high. Mm-hmm. Mine, I just leave flat. And there's Armagnac soaked soft apples that you stuff it with. And, God, it's just delicious.
Is Armagnac?
Yeah, it's like a brandy.
Oh, it's like cognac or brandy.
Yeah, it's like cognac or brandy. And the brown sugar and the Armagnac and the apples at this time of year, it would be a great dessert.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And then when that ruffled pie comes out of the oven, it's all tinged golden, and you just dust it a little bit with confectionery sugar.
It sounds very playful.
A lot of
recipes do sound like just, fun and playful, rather than, I guess there's a conception around desserts that it's for people of, like, I forget which one, it was like the more organized, like, right side of the brain, rather than the left side, you know,
technical,
perfectionist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it can be that way, but I think this kind of proves that, you know, there's a lot more creativity and whimsy kind of used
into
this.
The French have a lot of whimsy in dessert. That's a good word. Like the pear cake.
Mm-hmm.
They do Sophie Pick. Okay.
Oh, yes.
She's famous. She's famous for her what they call cakes. She makes cakes in a loaf tin.
Okay.
And the French went wild. So now everybody's making look cake. So you make it savory, but I did quite a few in the front of the book because people in France love these cakes.
Yeah.
And one of the ones I found that I love that they do that is really whimsical is the pear cake. And it's, the French call it an invisible loaf cake, an invisible cake, because you can't see the batter when you put it into the loaf pan, and it bakes up, and you can't even really see the cake holding the pears together.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's mostly pears. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. When I did it the first time, I went, whoa, what is this going to do? And you pull it out, and it's absolutely amazing cake. So, they do.
That's
they like
cool.
to play with their
kind
food.
Of like, just like a suspenseful baking experience.
Is it going to come out or not?
Right.
Yeah, no, they do. And the other thing that's fun is if you get French, like, cooking magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading about these cakes again and trying to learn some new things. But every recipe said put a pot of yogurt in.
Okay.
And what it means is they use the little pots that your yogurt comes in as they're measuring.
Oh.
So You don't measure out your yogurt in a regular measuring cup. They just say, oh, we'll put a pot of yogurt in. And so I started, you know, they play with their food a little bit. They do different things, and they're more relaxed. I would say they're more relaxed than you would imagine.
That's really cool. I would have put actual yogurt in. But
No, it is yogurt.
Okay, but they just, I see.
But they use the container.
Specific kind that you get.
A little Yoplait. You know, the container, the yogurt. Use the yogurt in your dessert, and then you use the pot, a pot of that, and then use the pot again to measure out your sugar. So it was interesting reading a French cooking magazine.
That is my kind of recipe. It's not too exact, but still that helps you get there. Well, thank you so much for transcribing these for our audience and
You're
discovering
welcome.
These gems. And there's so many more. I hope that everyone picks them up. And I'm looking at this almond pithiviere and vin chaud sorbet with frosted grapes. Raison givre. You know, there's just so many gems in here, and I love learning about the history of them. So
thank you, Kathy.
Thank you again for traveling around and indulging your sweet tooth.
My pleasure.
I'm sure. Well, I guess that's about all the time we have for today. But thanks so much for joining us, Hillary, and we look forward to your next cookbooks, definitely.
I always love coming.
Let us know.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow. And
thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Never had no loving like this before.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.